Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 6th of March. The scene in Alabama, Selma, Alabama, I thought was quite extraordinary. Over the course of the weekend, the front runners for the Democratic nomination for president, Senators Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, were there speaking at churches just blocks apart. They came to commemorate the Voting Rights March on Bloody Sunday, 42 years ago, when nonviolent demonstrators were attacked by police. And, of course, they also came to compete for the African American vote in the 2008 presidential election. One of the people who was there, Ethel Ree Waite, who at 64 still marvels that she no longer has to be afraid to be black in the state that she was born in, said, can they both be president? They are both beautiful people. I was one of the students that got a cattle prod on Turnaround Tuesday, she said. And we're going to be talking about the black vote, about what happened in Selma, about how the civil rights movement informed the politics, and perhaps the lives of the front runners for the Democratic presidential campaign. We have two terrific guests with us. Donna Brazile, we're so happy to have her with us. Donna is from New Orleans and was instrumental in the successful campaign to make Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday a federal holiday. She has worked on several presidential campaigns, probably most famously the 2000 presidential campaign of Vice President Al Gore. After the post-election fight over votes in Florida, was appointed chair of the Democratic National Committee's Voting Rights Institute. She is also teaching. She is an adjunct professor at Georgetown University. She is the founder and managing director of Brazil and Associates, and we're so happy to have her with us to talk about all of this. A little bit later this hour, Ronald Walters will join us, director of the African American Leadership Institute and a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland. Welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Donna Brazile, such a pleasure to have you back.
Thank you.
I was so struck by that scene, by the history of the scene, by the fact that we've got a woman and an African-American who are the front runners for the Democratic nomination, all of the people who were there who were beat up badly 42 years ago on Bloody Sunday. It was an image that will stay in my mind.
For me as well, I tell you, for the first time in our nation's history, our presidential candidates now reflect the growing diversity of our country.
Mm-hmm.
And for Democrats, of course, the leading candidates happen to be a female, Hillary Rodham Clinton, and of course, an African-American, Barack Obama. We also have, as you well know, Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, competing for the Democratic
mm-hmm.
nomination. So
mm-hmm.
this is a historic campaign season, one that has gotten off to a very hot, very early start. And I think voters will have an opportunity to look at the candidates to see who's viable, who represents their values, who will champion their issues, who will bring the country together, and who will help restore America's image abroad.
Yeah. A lot of African-American leaders have been very public in saying they're having a hard time putting support behind either Barack Obama or Senator Hillary Clinton. Do you share that concern, and can you explain it to me?
Well, it's an embarrassment of riches in many ways, because for the first time, as I mentioned, we have this diversity. But Senator Clinton has been a champion. She's been someone who sat at the table, who brought others to the table. Under the Clinton-Gore administration, African-Americans were able to see such advancement in home ownership and the creation of small businesses. And while there were some frictions, I mean, welfare reform, three strikes, you're out,
right.
Death penalty, African-Americans, by and large, give the Clinton-Gore administration high marks. And as a result, Senator Clinton is seen as someone who will champion the issue of civil rights, economic opportunity, job creation, and she is considered a very electable, viable candidate. On the other hand, Barack Obama, many people see him as the first African-American who can actually win the nomination and go on to win the presidency. Why? First of all, we're living in different times. The polls suggest that the American people are ready for a black president. Barack Obama is a United States senator. He's been a state senator in the state of Illinois. He's a civil rights attorney, a constitutional specialist, and he's seen as exciting, new, fresh,
right.
Someone who can energize the national electorate, and I believe that he used the occasion at Selma in Selma to introduce himself to black voters. In the end, I give Barack a slight advantage because he filled in the narrative of who he is and his extension or his commitment to the civil rights movement. So ultimately, that will help him with black voters as well as others. But Hillary is a strong candidate, and people should not underestimate her power. A power to galvanize, to energize, and to bring people together as well.
Yeah. How much of that is tied, though, Donna, to the fact that she's married to Bill Clinton? And he was, you know, he knew the words to the songs. He went to black churches. He felt very comfortable moving in all kinds of communities, was given by Toni Morrison the description of being the first black president. Is it because she's married to him, or can she take this issue on and be proud of her own accomplishments and get the black vote because of who she is?
I think she will campaign on her own record in the United States Senate. Someone who has championed children issues, family issues. She sponsored legislation to ensure that we clean up our electoral system. Every vote counts. I think she will rely a lot on her record. On the other hand, she is married to someone who is an asset, with poll numbers now 60-65%. Bill Clinton can help Hillary Clinton in ways that perhaps he could not help Al Gore in 2000. He was not as popular leaving office as he is now. And there's no question that some of the people who support Mrs. Clinton early on feel a deep loyalty to both Clintons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel as torn as others because, as I tell my friends, I enjoy flirting, but I refuse to fall in love. And also believed, as a former campaign manager for Al Gore, I would like to give Al Gore an opportunity to also, if he decides to throw his hat in the race. So this is a good time, if any, in our lifetime, to really examine the candidates, look at their issues, their background, not go into personalities, but their values, what they bring to the table. The United States in 2009 will be at a difficult crossroad, not just internationally with the war in Iraq, the war on terrorism, but also here at home, our fiscal uncertainty, the deficit, the growing budget deficit, all of the problems that this president will leave behind, mm-hmm. including the cleanup of the Gulf Coast. So I would hope that we would look for candidates who could not just help us deal with problems abroad, but also here at home.
Yeah. Talking about your quoting yourself here, I'm dating, I haven't fallen in love yet. You also said, and I think you got this whole thing rolling, Donna, on Oscar night, if Al Gore has slimmed down 25 or 30 pounds, Lord knows if he's running for president or not, but he hadn't slimmed down, had he?
Well, I don't think he's at his fighting weight. None of us are after the holidays, but I do believe that Al Gore, I've long admired Al Gore. I've known him for over 30 years.
Oh my.
What I admire most about Al Gore is his vision. He is someone who's looked at tough issues all throughout his life and said, you know what, let's deal with them, let's tackle them. He was a member of the Congressional Committee on the Task Force for the Future long before anybody was thinking about the planet and global warming and impact, mm-hmm. Of greenhouse gas emissions. It was Al Gore at the table. So I believe if he decides to run, he's ruled it out now, but I said there may be a window of opportunity, and if so, I want to be there waiting for him if he gets in.
Look,
I only have one vote. I'm a member of the DNC. I'm a super delegate, and I only have one vote. But I have a big mouth, and I like to talk up from time to time.
Yeah. Well, you're an insider here. What do you think? Is he going to run here? Because I would imagine you'd be involved in some way in the campaign.
Well, you know, I'm an insider. That is correct. But, you know, Gore is keeping some of these issues to himself. I mean, I haven't seen anything recently from him that says that he's ready to throw his hat in the ring. But what I am hearing is that he is willing to take a look at it and to decide if this is the best time. And if he rules it out this cycle, maybe he'll look at another cycle. But he was right on Iraq. Mm-hmm. He was right on climate change. He was right on the first Gulf War. And given his leadership and the tremendous respect that he has abroad, I think mm-hmm. we want somebody in the White House who can hit the ground running on election.
Yeah.
I mean, the day after the election.
Well, he might even win the Nobel Prize.
Well, you know, and all the better. And he has a book coming out this spring. So, look, Al Gore has a future, and part of what he is doing now is using the political capital he's garnered to make the nation more aware of the dangers of global warming.
Right.
And for now, that's the campaign he's embarked on, and I respect that.
Yeah. Let's go back to Barack Obama for a moment. There's been so much symbolism already in this very, just begun, but very, very long presidential race. I got to tell you, Donna, that I was just, a tear came to my eye. I'm from Illinois. I love Abraham Lincoln. I've read so many books about him. And for Obama to pick, you know, the place where Lincoln gave the House Divided speech in Springfield, Illinois, where I went in an eighth grade graduation trip and have been there many times since. I got to tell you, I was moved. I was deeply moved.
The symbolism, I thought, was very powerful given the state of the politics of this nation. You know, I've been following what Barack Obama has been saying on the campaign trail, talking about the politics of cynicism, reminding the American people that if we don't clean up our politics, we can't get anything done. I'm reading a book now called Divided Nation by Earl and Merle Black. They're the Black brothers out of the South. They write about Southern politics, but they talk about the nation and how polarized we've become, and this polarization is causing gridlock in Washington, D.C., is causing gridlock in other state capitals. And what Barack is embarking upon is a conversation to tell the American people, we can't all be in the right camp or the wrong camp. We all have to be in the same camp, the community camp, for our country. He's telling us that we can hope, we can dream, but we can't solve our complex problems if we continue this politics of polarization.
Yeah, Donna Brazile is our guest. She's with us a few more minutes. If you want to join in the conversation, grab a phone right now and get on the line. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. I want to ask you, Donna, about the civil rights movement, the anniversary that we marked 42 years since Bloody Sunday. What do you think, and go beyond Hillary and Barack and to other candidates as well, how do you think it informs them? They both have laid claim to this has been a movement that has determined in some measure who they are and given them a chance to be where they are right now. Are they overstating this or not?
Oh, no. The Civil Rights Revolution changed the way America treated at the time its largest minority group. It helped to take down barriers, obstacles to equal opportunity. It made the Constitution and our nation more stronger, more of a perfect union. So the civil rights struggle, the civil rights movement really inspired a generation. I was too young to march with Martin Luther King or to participate in the sit-ins, but it inspired me as I was coming of age, as a little girl growing up in the Deep South. I knew what was happening downtown in the city of New Orleans. I knew when my mother would say to us that we could now sit in the front of the bus and I had to go to the back. It inspired people, and I think it's important to translate that conversation and to transform it by telling young people today that service is the rent we pay for living on this planet. Those are the words of Shirley Chisholm. We have to give back. We have to continue to ensure that the doors of equality, the doors of opportunities remain open for the next generation to come.
Yeah. What about the importance of the Black vote to all of the candidates? It's pretty important, isn't it?
Oh, no question. The African-American vote, which represents, more than 10% of the national electorate, but in terms of the Democratic primary, African-Americans make up anywhere between 15% to 25%, depending on the state. And in two early states, we don't have a large Black population. But when you look at South Carolina, more than 45%, maybe 50% of the electorate will be African American. Nevada, 10%. And then in those first, in the national primaries, African Americans will make up 20% to 25%. I'm gratified that the candidates are not driving by, the last 3 weeks of the election. Instead, they're campaigning early for the African American vote. They're calling on African Americans to raise money to work on political campaigns, and all of the major campaigns right now, there are African Americans serving in important positions. And when I got involved in politics years ago, and Professor Walters noticed, there were just a handful of Black operatives. Today we have Black strategists, Black pollsters, Black media consultants, and that's a testament of not just our great nation and our country, but also the Democratic Party in helping to train a new generation to serve.
Yeah. I would imagine all of these campaigns have been after you, would like for you to sign up, Don, am I right?
Absolutely, but I'm enjoying my life now, and I believe my calling is to help ensure that we have clean, transparent, and open elections. I'm working with Governor Dean on proposals to help ban these vote machines that do not give us an actual accurate count or a paper ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow I'll be testifying on Capitol Hill before the House Judiciary Committee on voter intimidation, voter suppression. I think that's a better use of my time. Look, I love all of these candidates. I've worked on 7 presidential campaigns, 56 congressional campaigns, 19 state and local, 46 states in 2004.
Oh, wow.
And I tell my friends, 4 more states I would have been Miss USA without the bikini. So I'm enjoying my life. I spent about a week down home in New Orleans, and I have to tell you, if there's one calling I have in my life, the rest of my life, it is to ensure that the Gulf Coast comes back, that my home city, my family, my friends, and others can go home. And one day we will be able to stir that big old pot of gumbo and serve it to the country to say thank you for standing by us, sticking with us as we rebuild.
Yeah, I hope that happens, Donna. We'll take just a couple quick calls for Donna Brazile, our guest, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network. Joining us in just a few minutes, we'll have a couple more minutes with Donna Brazile and then Ron Walters, director of the African American Leadership Institute. According to the Black Vote, the extraordinary scene in Selma over the weekend is what we're talking about this hour of the program. Steve from Houston, Texas. Hi, Steve.
Yes, good morning. I just have a quick question. I'd like to know, when will the 3 issues that conservative African Americans promote, when will they get recognized? And those issues are the faith-based initiatives that the president has begun that have helped tremendous numbers of African Americans in the inner city, that's primarily working in the inner city, abstinence education, the plague of free sex is a major plague, particularly with young African-Americans, and magnet in charter schools. Here in Houston, we have a great support for that, and there's so many of them that are succeeding in the inner cities where the public schools are falling apart. It's like, you know, when will people like Dr. Walter Williams or James Bevel, Clarence Thomas, Condoleezza Rice, the conservatives in the African-American community, people that I respect, when will they get the honor and recognition that they deserve?
Donna.
Well, when they come on shows like this and talk about their values, talk about what they believe in, and not be afraid to preach their gospel in the choir to those who are listening. Look, I understand that there are so-called issues that many African American conservatives have embraced: abstinence education, school choice, school vouchers, etc., faith-based initiatives. Many of those initiatives, have not seen the light of day in the African-American community. Many African-Americans are opposed to them because, in terms of school choice, they believe that we should invest and support and uplift our public schools. But in terms of African-American conservatives, and there are a growing number of them in this country, about, 3 to 5% of the black electorate, I don't see them as being salient in the black community, because African Americans would like their leaders and others to talk about issues that are more current. The war in Iraq, for example, the disparities in education and inequality gap, the lack of home ownership in certain communities, the rising unemployment rate, the cradle to the prison pipeline that pervades our community, especially young black men. So they want to hear candidates discuss those issues, and perhaps the caller should encourage John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, and others who are Republicans and fighting for the conservative vote to address those in the conservative caucuses that they attend.
The black vote, we've seen some vote go Republican, but it still is, it's in the pockets of the Democrats, right? You don't see that changing.
I don't see any shift, and I know Professor Walter, who studies and analyzed this. I mean, in the last electoral cycle, George Bush was able to pick up an additional 4% of the African-American vote. Traditionally, African-American Republicans attract about, or Republicans in general, attract about 10 to 12% of the black vote. In this past election cycle, the only African-American Republican candidate to generate more than 20% of the black vote was Michael Steele, the lieutenant governor of Maryland, who went on to lose the Senate race.
Mm-hmm.
But African-Americans tend to vote their conscience, they vote their values, they vote their issues, and they vote for people who will fight and champion their concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, Iraq is a major issue. African-Americans have opposed the war in Iraq from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Health care, poverty, justice and equality. They care about the whole, array of issues, but they want candidates who will stand up and fight and not sit at the table and just smile.
Yeah. What about this, and then we'll let you go. What about this issue of Barack Obama having to establish himself as African-American before he gets the wholehearted support of people like Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson, et cetera? I mean, this is kind of a weird thing. You have to establish yourself as black. You have to establish yourself as somebody who's concerned about issues issues that African Americans are concerned about? What's that all about, Donna?
Well, first of all, there shouldn't be a litmus test for any particular group of Americans. We should encourage people of any, whether they're black immigrants or African Americans born in this country, we should encourage them to acknowledge the past of those who have struggled for freedom and justice. And if they're willing to stand, as Barack Obama has been willing to stand, we should not in any way impose different measures of success or litmus tests. Look, I have embraced white Democratic candidates, conservative candidates, liberal, moderate, bland, bloring, you name them. I've embraced them all. But I had my own values. I knew the principles that I supported. And, you know, Bill Clinton wasn't everything that I wanted to see in a candidate. I opposed the death penalty. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton did not. I did not like his welfare reform proposal, mm-hmm. but he pushed forward and got it. And three strikes, you're off. I didn't dig that pretty much. But, you know, overall, he was a good president for African Americans. And so I think Barack had to show, and he did it on Sunday, that his narrative, mm-hmm. the narrative of any person in this country who understands equality of opportunity, he understood the struggle, that he believed that he is a beneficiary of the struggle. He stood on shoulders of those who marched before him, who sacrificed their lives, and he essentially said, and I'm ready, the Joshua generation, to cross the next river, to cross the next, the next line so that we can break down more barriers. So I think this is a wide-open contest. The black vote is up for grabs, and while we might like this candidate or that candidate because they sound better or look better, I can tell you one thing. In terms of the Democrats, we have a group of people who have championed civil rights, and when you look at their voting histories, whether the Children's Defense Fund, NAACP, they all have, you know, they're all in the 90 to 100 percentile. So we have a good group of candidates, and I hope voters get a chance to get to know them, and perhaps they will fall in love and find a candidate that they like.
They're going to have a lot of time to get them to know them, that's for sure.
That is correct.
Well, we'll be looking to see if Al Gore loses weight, and then we know where your future might be, Donna. And, you know, what about you running for something? I bet a lot of people have approached you to.
Well, I love running my mouth.
Yeah.
I enjoy teaching, and I enjoy doing what I've been doing over the last couple of months of my life. But the most important thing is I want to encourage a new generation to serve, to listen and hear the call that is being, brought before them by the candidates. And if Barack Obama is someone they like, embrace him, support him. Don't sit around and spend the rest of your life figuring out, can he win? Mm-hmm. When I worked for Jesse Jackson in 1984, I didn't know if it would lead us to the White House or whatever, but I knew it was an opportunity to serve and to get out there to make a difference in my country. Mm. So get out there and fulfill your own commitment to leadership and service. If you like Hillary Clinton or John Edwards or Joe Biden, Dennis Kucinich, Wesley Clark, I'm sure I'm missing somebody. Bill Richardson, I mentioned him. Just get out there and support them and give them some love and embrace the candidate. If you're a Republican, go out there and embrace McCain or Giuliani or Mitt Romney or Sam Brownback. I don't know a lot of those candidates on the Republican side, but I can tell you this much. This is a wide open race.
Yeah.
First time since 1928, we don't have a president or vice president running for re-election or what have you. So get out there and shop around.
All right, Donna, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Donna Brazile. She was Al Gore's campaign manager in the 2000, that infamous 2000 election, and she is now, she's involved in all kinds of things. She indicated that, maybe Gore will run, and she's been approached by all of the campaigns to sign up with them, but she is, as she says, she's still dating. She tells people, I'm dating, I haven't fallen in love yet. But she was the one who said on Oscar night, if Al Gore has slimmed down 25 or 30 pounds, Lord knows, maybe he would run. We're talking this hour of the program about what happened in Selma, Alabama on Sunday with Senators Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, both giving, I thought, very stirring speeches commemorating what happened 42 years ago, where white police officers badly beat protesters 42 years ago. And so you had this the sight that stays in your memory with these senators locking arms with people who had been beaten 42 years ago, with two black members of Congress walking down Martin Luther King Jr. Street to commemorate the footsteps of the black demonstrators who were met with violence. The visit to Selma was also a campaign opportunity for both Clinton and Obama. And it looks as though, you know, there's some division here. The more the weeks go on, Barack Obama, who was said to have been establishing himself as an African-American by his appearance in Selma, that among black voters, percentage of people who are viewing him favorably and would sign up with him is increasing. But we're looking at this this battle for the vote of African-Americans. And we're just going to switch guests here and continue with the same topic. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation. And I'm interested in hearing your reflections on what you thought about what happened at Selma on Sunday. Professor Ronald Walters is director of the African American Leadership Institute and distinguished leadership scholar at the James McGregor Burns Academy of Leadership, and also professor in government and politics at the University of Maryland. His undergraduate work was at Fisk University, his MA in African Studies and PhD in International Studies from American University. He has been a professor at Howard, Brandeis, and Syracuse, has taught at Princeton and Harvard, served as the senior policy staff member for Congressman Charles Diggs, Congressman William Gray. He was deputy campaign manager for issues of the Jesse Jackson campaign for president in 84 and in 88, consultant for convention issues, also for the Jackson campaign. He serves as a senior policy consultant to the Kellogg Foundation, has written many books, most recently Freedom is Not Enough, Black Voters, Black Candidates, and American Presidential Politics. He also writes a weekly opinion column for newspapers and for websites, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Walters at 800-486-8655, 227-2050 for those of you who are in Milwaukee. Professor Walters, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
I don't want to be too simplistic about this, but I got to tell you, I'm so struck by the symbolism of this Democratic race. You know, to have an African American, to have a woman, and to have an Hispanic man be among the top runners here, and the woman and the African American being the front runners, you know, it's just amazing to me. And I think John Lewis put it so well when he talked about he couldn't have imagined this, you know, 42 years ago. He just couldn't have imagined it, and here it is.
He's absolutely right about that. I think we have made some progress in that respect, and I think it's interesting because when you look at whether or not blacks believe that a black person is going to be president or could be president of the United States, they don't believe it. As a matter of fact, despite the fact that they have very high regard right now for Barack Obama.
They don't believe it because the history that we were just referencing was not that long ago, and so they're informed by that fairly recent history?
That's right. I think most people sort of have collapsed time on us and don't really understand the sort of the power of the psychological experience that blacks sort of went through, and that colors their perception of what's possible in America.
Mm-hmm.
And so to that extent, when you look at recent public opinion polls that show that in the initial polls, the Washington Post, Hillary Clinton, of course, was up 60% to 20%.
Right.
That switched.
Right.
And now you have 44% to 33% blacks feel that Barack Obama is the person.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look inside that poll and ask and see where they're asked a question whether or not they actually believe that a black person could be president, it's only 20%.
Really?
That's right.
20%?
That's right.
Wow. He is such an amazingly strong presence, isn't he, Professor Walters? I mean, there's something about this guy that is attracting all kinds of people. He's just he's inspirational in a way that you haven't seen from political leaders for a long period of time. The crowds that are meeting him, the book being number one on the bestseller list for weeks and weeks and weeks, there's something going on here that we haven't seen before. They talk about John Kennedy, but I think it's something new.
Well, I'm not sure it's totally new. I mean, there is this overused metaphor, the perfect storm. I hear he was on a book tour. This book sort of represents a classic American sort of rags-to-riches story.
Mm-hmm.
It grabbed the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was very persuasive to many of his colleagues who were out campaigning. And they said, wait a minute, this guy is grabbing the public. let us get him on the stump. As a matter of fact, come campaign for me to be elected. This is the 2006 election cycle.
Yeah, right.
And so he was doing two things. He was pushing his book, which was doing very well in the public, and also campaigning. Mm-hmm. And that really led to the possibility of him thinking that, well, wait a minute, I could run for president of the United States. And so to that extent, I think that's one thing. But the other thing has to do with the fact that Colin Powell, some time ago, was also considered to be the front runner for president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
For some of the same reasons, Colin Powell was from Jamaica. He was, in some ways, disconnected from sort of the history of African-Americans in this country. And therefore, in the eyes of many whites, disconnected from sort of the pain and suffering and the guilt and all of that sort of psychological baggage that mm-hmm. people bring up when you look at an African-American today.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, was something that I think made it possible for people to say, well, I can support this guy because he is disconnected from that past.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing, I think. And then, of course, I think finally the guy is charismatic. He's authentic.
Yes.
He is,
yes.
You know, he's verbose. And I think that those qualities lend itself very well to television, to public speaking, and all the rest of the public presentation.
Right, right. I agree with you. So what did you make of what was going on in Selma? We were talking to Donna Brazil the first half hour here. I was really struck by the history, Professor Walters. It wasn't that long ago. It was a horrendous day in American history. People beat up badly, and it also galvanized a country. So I was thinking about 42 years ago and then watching this event of these two candidates, an African-American and a woman, for heaven's sake, with walking with black congressmen, reenacting the walk. It was, to me, it was a very moving day.
Yes, it was. And I think to me, likewise, to know that you come from the situation that John Lewis faced and the violence to a point where that has really become iconic in terms of the passage of the Voting Rights Act. And now, of course, the success of that. And that really is sort of the point of my most recent book. I looked at the Voting Rights Act, and this was the last year, was the 40th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. And the question was, well, how far have we come? And that sort of was represented by that march over the bridge and by the speeches.
Yeah.
And we've come a long way. I mean, if you look at the 2000 election cycle, blacks pretty much caught up with whites to the proportion of their communities that's turning out to vote. And most people don't know that. And I think if they knew it, they would say, well, yes, it's true. Voting Rights Act, what happened in Selma was really sort of the most important thing in the civil rights period.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Professor Ronald Walters. And here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 227-2050, if you're joining us in Milwaukee. We're talking about what happened in Selma. We're looking at courting the black vote. We're looking at Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama and Bill Richardson and how far we've come in 42 years, and welcoming your phone calls. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Ronald Walters, director of the African American Leadership Institute, distinguished leadership scholar at the James McGregor Burns Academy of Leadership, professor in government and politics at the University of Maryland. He's been active politically for a long period of time. His latest book is Freedom is Not Enough, Black Voters, Black Candidates, and American Presidential Politics. 800-486-8655 is our number. Join in whenever you'd like. We start with Mike from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yes. Hi, Kathleen. I really enjoy your program.
Thanks.
I think if the Democrats should prevail next year, that you're going to see these two key candidates who are in Selma in very close proximity, either as running mates or in a Secretary of State presidential arrangement. So I think it could have even been like a dress rehearsal for something much bigger.
What do you think, Professor Walters? Could they work together in that kind of capacity?
There's a lot of opposition out here to the notion that America would accept a white woman and a black man running at the same time for president and vice president of the United States. I mean, it looks as though it would be the ideal ticket right now because they are competing. They're the odds-on favorite. And the logic says that, why not run together? but you challenge the sensibilities of Americans on both racism and sexism, and a lot of people just don't think that ticket would fly.
So play around with it. What about Edwards Obama? What about Clinton?
That's more reasonable.
Uh-huh.
The Edwards Obama more reasonable because it presents you with a traditional white male at the top ticket, possibility then of some change with respect to an office that's really not that powerful, the Vice President of the United States.
Right.
And so I think most people think that that is the ticket that probably if you did have a black person on the ticket would be more acceptable to the American people.
Mm-hmm.
Quick follow-up, Kathy?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Mike.
My dream the ticket would be Obama as president, Hillary as Secretary of State, because like Obama, the cool figure at the center, and Hillary, and just like her husband Bill, really good on the fly as a diplomat, or just a real serious player, like a what Condoleezza Rice is doing currently.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike, so much for your call. Lines are open. Jump in, everybody. Where are you? I thought you'd be itching to talk about this issue. 800-486-8655. We're talking about what happened at Selma, courting the black vote this hour of the program. Barack Obama having to prove that he is African-American. The love affair, which I have yet to ask Professor Walters about, African-American embracing of the Clintons and whether that extends to Hillary Clinton. I also want to ask him about Al Gore because Donna Brazil intimated that, you know, he still might get in the race here. 800-486-8655. You know, it's interesting to watch the polls, as you were indicating, that African-Americans don't believe an African-American could win, but they're starting to embrace him more. It seems to me as though this strong attachment to Bill Clinton may not carry over to a very strong attachment among African-Americans to Hillary. Do you think?
I think there's a real problem there, yes, for her. And I think it was Senator Emil Jones of the Illinois State Senate who asked the question. He's the strong backer of Barack Obama. And he asked the question, how long should African Americans support or feel that they owe any candidate for president of the United States? That was a reference, really a veiled reference, to Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a pregnant question, because a lot of people are switching from their allegiance to the Clintons to Barack Obama. And that's really happening all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the recent, of course, flap out in Hollywood with Giffen and others who are switching from the Clintons to Barack Obama. And that's the stuff of the kind of competition that's going on here right now. But there is no question. There is this holdover from the Clintons to the black community is still very much alive, and Bill Clinton was popular, as a matter of fact, so popular that he didn't even go to the church when Hillary Clinton spoke on Sunday. He stayed away and then joined them in the march over the bridge. He was getting an award for the Civil Rights Institute there, and so he didn't want to overshadow her, and that had happened once before.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to actually heavy-duty campaigning, Professor Walters, considering the Republican makeup of the South, will any of these candidates be doing much heavy-duty campaigning there, or will they essentially write off the South because they can win this election without the South?
Well, that is a very interesting question, because, and I address this in my book, because in the 2000 and 2004 election cycle, the Democratic Party wrote off the South. Many of us think that that was a mistake. Mistake because, first of all, the voting base of the black community is in the South. Secondly, when you look at some of the candidates, the Democratic candidates who lost in the South, in some of those states, they lost in the mid-40s, which means that with 5 or 6 or 7 percentage points more, that they could win a few of those states.
Mm-hmm.
If the Democratic Party invests some resources there, you could put together a black-white coalition that could possibly win.
Huh.
Now,
huh.
Think about what Harold Ford Jr. just did in Tennessee, and barely winning a Senate seat in Tennessee. That means that there is a possibility, maybe slim, that the Democratic Party can win some states in the South.
Well, that's interesting. Do you want to name which ones look most likely for them?
Well, the one I just mentioned, I think, because of what's happened is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think North Carolina, people think about North Carolina as a possibility, and maybe even Virginia, because of the election of a Democrat to the Senate.
Right,
Virginia.
Right.
So at least those three states, there may be a possibility of a Democrat winning in those states with a beefed up sort of white part of a black coalition. Some of those states, the black proportion of the Democratic Party has reached 40-50%.
Goodness.
And
isn't that
not
something?
Enough to win.
Wow, 40 or 50%.
That's right.
Whew.
And primarily because of the shift of the white population to the Republican Party.
Yeah. Let's go back to phone calls. Barb is next from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Barb.
Good morning.
Hi.
And thank you for your guest. I was tempted to call and didn't get in on time on Donna Brazil. I really appreciate you having her on. And this particular guest, my comment is in regards to on the Democratic primary race with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton particularly, that I was reading something that pundits wrote about the appeal that Barack Obama is having on all generations, that he has generated a great deal of enthusiasm in the, like, even the over 80 in the retired group and also the youthful vote. And it really kind of hit a chord, and it the gist of it was kind of about baby boomer fatigue, about the baggage that baby boomer candidates have, including Gingrich and Gore and Clinton and
mm-hmm,
Bush and all of that. And I was wondering if your guests could address what seems to be like enthusiasm for a number of generations. And I guess basically that.
Yeah, I think she's on to something. I think that's a big part of this race, Professor Walters.
No, I think she's right. There is this question about change that I think that hovers over the 2008 election as it did the 2006 election. And let's be clear that the war is in the background,
yes,
fueling a lot of it.
Yes.
As a context within which these elections take place. And so there is, I think, this feeling that, well, the old politics really got us into this mess. We need a new politics in order to change it. And here comes somebody who looks fairly attractive and looks as though he may have the right positions and the right stuff to do it. And that's been attractive to a lot of American people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we ought to keep this war thing in the background, because I think it is so important that under normal circumstances, Barack Obama may not be doing as well.
Mm. Oh, and it's because of the war issue, which is dominating.
I think that's
campaign.
A lot of it. I think
she
sort of laid out the fact that there are many generations here, and when you collapse them, you have to ask the question why, and that is, I think, it's being fueled by a very powerful emotional issue in the background.
Mm-hmm. And she can't get away from. I don't know what she's going to do about it. She seems to hold steady with this, not wanting to flip flop on her vote for the war, but boy, it's just going to follow her everywhere she goes.
Yes, and I think that that's a vulnerability that has to do with foreign policy. I think in terms of domestic policy, there is a real question here. I've written this week that one has to figure out whether or not Hillary Clinton is going to stray very far from the line of the Democratic Leadership Council.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The DLC is the right wing of the Democratic Party, and her and Bill have been leaders. In that group. So it means to me that Barack Obama, having a far more liberal posture in terms of public policy, may in fact be more acceptable.
Oh, that's interesting. What about Al Gore? Donna indicated the first half hour that she was holding out for the possibility that he might run again and she would go to war for him again. But she also talked about the fact that he was pretty hefty at the Oscars, and it doesn't look likely, at least right now. He's got to lose 25 pounds, and we don't know if he's in the gym as we speak. But what do you think? Do you think there's a chance that he would jump in, and how would he upset the apple cart?
Well, I think that he is, first of all, a viable candidate, and he's in the background, certainly hovering there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is a possibility that these two people will compete so hard that at the final analysis, the Democratic activists will say, wait a minute, you know, neither one of them are acceptable. Let's see if we can't get someone who has proven that he can win. He's already won. It's proven that he can win and can campaign and so forth. And he wasn't hurt at all by the Oscar and by the reception that he's got among American people about global warming and environmental issues.
Yeah.
And it's a big issue. Mm-hmm. And I think he could take that issue and do very well with it. Mm-hmm. So let's not write him off at all.
Thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Chris next from Blue Mounds. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Yeah, my comment, I think, is timely. I just wanted to comment that my dream ticket would be Al Gore and Barack Obama. And I think it's because they really represent a true transformation, kind of an antithesis to the Bush-Cheney ticket, just in so many ways, with a very experienced and visionary politician as president, and a young and exciting candidate for vice president. And also, Obama gives the African-American community that amazing and powerful symbol of the potential of African-American, what it means to be an African-American man and a successful one.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't had that, I don't know, for a long time, not since Jesse Jackson ran for president. And I think it's really about time.
Yeah, Professor Walters.
I think that he's got something. Because if you really want change, you might even conceive of a ticket like that.
Mm-hmm.
Al Gore and Barack Obama, because that on two dimensions, both with respect to environmental affairs, with respect to Gore, and secondly, I think Barack Obama's got right now the most heartfelt position on the war. I think most mm-hmm. Americans right now in the polls want the United States out of Iraq and out of the mess in the Middle East, and that's where he stands. And so with respect to both of those, you could get a lot of change. What it means is that the formulation I put out there in terms of John Edwards may be lacking, because if you put the John Edwards Barack Obama ticket up against Al Gore, it seems that Al Gore is the best one, primarily because John Edwards hasn't given us a lot to chew on. He is an acceptable candidate. He ran a fairly decent race. He is an attractive guy, but in terms of the issues, he simply hasn't caught fire with the American people yet.
Right. He's got a heck of a wife. I really like her.
Yes, that's
she's
true.
Just terrific. Can we spend just a few moments, and thanks so much for your call, Barack Obama and African-American leadership in this country, and there are other African-American leaders, but I'm interested in Congressman Lewis's comments that he's torn here between Clinton and Obama. We've got Al Sharpton, who's still considering a run, although I'm not sure why he is. And we don't have Jesse Jackson fully embracing Barack Obama. What's the holdoff here? Why you've got this guy who's taken the country by storm. Why isn't he being fully embraced and people starting to campaign for him, who really have a lot of respect in the black community?
Well, people want to know where he stands, and I think that's logical. One of the reasons why African Americans haven't fully embraced him is that, first of all, they didn't know who he was, and they still, a lot of them, don't know what he stands for.
Hmm.
And so he's got to campaign. He's got to roll that stuff out and get people on board. And if he's in the polls right now, 44-33 against Hillary, 44 is still a long way from, the 80s.
Right, right.
So there are a lot of people, when they hear Barack Obama, they hear Indonesia, Kenya, Hawaii, everything but Alabama and Mississippi.
Or south side of Chicago.
Chicago. So they say, I wonder who this guy is. I mean, and can he really sort of take our issues into the political system? So I think when people get comfortable with him enough, they will then, I think, support him in much, much larger numbers. And that's where Reverend Jackson and Al Sharpton come in. They're political leaders. We sort of look to them to vet anybody who stands up for the black community and says, I want your support for president. That's what they're doing.
No.
I think if, and there are people urging Al Sharpton to get in because he would push the field to the left. He would stand up there and he would say exactly what's on the minds of the black voters.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, we don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
We get sort of an indirect discussion about these issues. And the value of having somebody up there who is going to speak directly to them is that he gives you a mirror. He gives you a valence to bounce off of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sometimes very helpful.
Hmm. And then you would have the people who most know how to turn a phrase, and that would be Al Sharpton and Barack Obama. Can you imagine that? You know, this is just a remarkable campaign. I know it's going to go on forever, but I think it's so interesting because of all the people who are running. It's going to be fascinating.
It is. And it's an embarrassment of riches to some extent for the black vote, because this is the first time the black vote has been competed for this hotly, and the first time it's had this kind of opportunity for sort of selecting, you know, a lot of people who feel very much that the black vote is important.
Yeah, good way to put it, embarrassment of riches. Thank you so much for being with us, Professor Walters. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Professor Ronald Walters is director of the African American Leadership Institute, distinguished leadership scholar at the James McGregor Burns Academy of Leadership, also a professor in government and politics at the University of Maryland. He was deputy campaign manager for issues of the Jesse Jackson campaign for president in 84 and in 88, a consultant for convention issues. He has written a number of books, including Freedom Is Not Enough, Black Voters, Black Candidates, and American Presidential Politics. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this great hour. Thanks to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for calling and listening. This show will repeat at 10 o'clock tonight, or copies of it. Call the radio store, 800-747-7444. The program number is 36E. Until tomorrow, this is the Ideas Network.